You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Catherine Pierce. Catherine, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Catherine, I know today we're going to be talking about poetry, and you'll be reading a little bit. But just to step back a bit, it's January 13th in 2021. We're in the middle of a pandemic and a pretty difficult time. You're in Delaware talking. I feel like I should ask, what are you working on at the moment, or just what's happening at the moment?
What is happening?
It's a crazy time to ask that question to be interviewing
people.
But what's going on in terms of your practice, or just what's happening right now?
Yeah. Well, right, I'm in Delaware right now. I'm from Delaware originally, but I teach at Mississippi State in Starkville, Mississippi, where I co-direct the creative writing program, and I've been there for 14 years. And so I'm here right now just because I'm teaching remotely this semester. My classes are all online, and so my family is kind of bubbling with the grandparents to sort of get some childcare help and help my husband and I teach our classes, and it's good for everybody. So we're doing that. But in terms of what I am working on, honestly, I'm kind of working on navigating the pandemic and virtual teaching and virtual school for my kids and just kind of figuring out everything there. You know, I've written a handful of poems since March, but it's been hard to get that sort of brain space that I need to do much creative work. So, and my book Danger Days came out in October, so I was doing a lot of work around kind of the launch of that. But yeah, lately I've been taking notes toward poems and kind of saving them up, I hope, for a time when I might have some more time and space to really sit and focus on that for a while.
Because that hasn't been what you've had with all this craziness and the teaching and Zoom and offline.
Yes.
And I mean, there's just so much,
There's just a lot going on. I mean, there's four of us living in a small place right now, and we've got two young kids doing grade school online and a dog, you know, who requires things, and it's a lot. So I think with a lot of people, you know, everyone's just kind of trying to make it work as best we can right now.
Exactly. So what will you be reading today? What's the first poem that you're going to read? What is this from?
So my book Danger Days came out in October from Saturnalia Books, and it has to do a lot with climate crisis and the planet and, you know, current political situations in our country. And kind of how those things connect. So I thought I might start off by reading the first poem in the book, which is called Anthropocene Pastoral. We're in the Anthropocene era right now, the era of human impact on the earth. And I wrote this poem during the super bloom of 2017, when the California deserts were just covered in all these gorgeous wildflowers and people were traveling there and taking photographs, and it was just, you know, phenomenally beautiful. But it was also an event that was caused by that region's worst dry spell in history and then followed by twice the normal wintertime precipitation. So like so many weather events that we have these days, it was precipitated by extreme weather that caused it, extreme climate circumstances. And so I wanted to write a poem kind of looking at that idea that it's easier to ignore destruction when it looks like beauty. So this is called Anthropocene Pastoral. In the beginning, the ending was beautiful. Early spring everywhere, the trees furred pink and white, lawns the sharp green that meant new. The sky so blue it looked manufactured. Robins. We'd heard the cherry blossoms wouldn't blossom this year, but what was one epic blooming when even the desert was an explosion of verbena, when bobcats slinked through primroses, when coyotes slept deep in orange poppies? One New Year's Day we woke to daffodils, wisteria, onion grass wafting through the open windows. Near the end, we were eyeletted. We were cottoned. We were sundressed and barefoot. At least it's starting gentle, we said. An absurd comfort, we knew, a placebo. But we were built like that. Built to say, at least. Built to reach for the heat of skin on skin, even when we were already hot. Built to love the purpling desert in the twilight. Built to marvel over the pink bursting dogwoods. To hold tight to every pleasure, even as we rocked together toward the graying. Even as we held each other, warmth to warmth, and said, sorry, I'm so sorry. While petals sifted softly to the ground all around us.
Thank you. That's so interesting. It's such an interesting and disturbing idea, right? Something that's so beautiful, but is a sign of something so awful, you know?
Yeah. And it happens
really
all the time.
About it way before. Yeah, I guess it does, right? I'm trying to think of, there must be examples of that all the time.
Right. Well, even in just a much more minor way, I think of times when, you know, I live in Mississippi, and it's warmer there, obviously, most of the time than it is up north. But even still, I mean, we get the four seasons, and we do get winter and where I live and all of that. And there are days when I'll go outside in January and think, oh, man, it's so nice. I could wear a T-shirt today. And I could, and that feels great, except that it probably shouldn't, right? Because it's indicative of something much bigger and more troubling. Or you see the trees get confused and they'll start blooming in the fall when really they're not supposed to be blooming right then. And so just these small things that look like beauty or that feel really pleasant, right, but are actually harbingers of something worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, also, as you say, our ability to kind of, you know, want it to be that way, to kind of, you know, it's such a kind of complex way of looking at climate change and, you know, all these difficult things happening. I mean, that not necessarily, well, it's a number of things, but yeah, ecological collapse maybe is a better way than climate change.
Right.
You know, and yeah, beautiful and disturbing. Thank you. What's the next one you're going to read? Is that also from this book?
I thought I would just stick with this one because it's the new one.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So another thing that this book deals with a lot is parenthood. I mentioned before I have two sons. They're 6 and 10 right now, and so I was writing this book over the last 4 or 5 years when my kids were pretty little. And, you know, thinking about what it means to be raising kids during this time, and also just the incredibly sort of exquisitely sharp emotions that go into raising young children. Everything just feels, you know, very, very intense, but also sometimes kind of muted because you're so exhausted or, you know, everything's kind of blurred at times. And so the next poem I'm going to read deals with becoming a mother, and this is a poem. A few years ago, the astronaut Scott Kelly came to speak at Mississippi State, where I teach, and I went to go see him because I've always been really fascinated by space travel. And this is, you know, the astronaut whose brother Mark Kelly from Arizona is also an astronaut, and Scott Kelly spent a year in space, and when he came back, they did all these studies comparing him and his twin brother Mark, and sort of seeing how a year in space physically changes somebody. And as he was talking about that, I was jotting things down, and I was thinking, God, this really sounds a lot like what it felt like to become a mother. Which is kind of it was a funny comparison to make, but it felt right. And so this is a poem that I wrote about that, and it's called How Becoming a Mother is Like Space Travel. The astronaut told us he didn't look out the window for 8.5 minutes as the rocket launched him beyond our atmosphere. Terrifying things happened. Ground vanished, boosters exploded, day became night, and he did not look. He was focusing, he said, on his job. He was up there a long time. He learned to sleep suspended. He learned how the sunrise looks when you watch it every morning from the soft, dark mouth of space. Many things, he told us, were different than he'd once expected. There's no space ice cream, he said. That's a big hoax. His vision blurred. His body became a study. Blood, appetite, cognitive function. He took many pictures. All of them were beautiful. None of them showed what it was like to float. When the astronaut returned to Earth, more tests were run. Scientists discovered that 7% of his genes had changed in space. He left the planet as himself. He came back as himself, rearranged.
Thank you. Oh. That is such a fascinating study and an unusual angle on kind of this idea of you know, collapse, ecological collapse, or this dangerous time. But that's a little more subtle, a little more nuanced, especially the comparison to raising a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one of the things that really struck me about his talk and that found me kind of making that connection that I didn't expect to make, obviously, between space travel and becoming a parent.
Well, I love that connection, though. It seems right on somehow. You know?
Thank you. But it was that idea when he was talking about how he didn't look out the window as he was being launched into space because he had a job to do, and he knew if he looked out the window at all the, you know, absolutely wild and terrifying things happening around him, he knew that he would not be able to do the job that he absolutely had to do. And that was the part that really felt to me like becoming a mother. I mean, when I think if I ever really let myself think about all that would be required, just thinking about like literally childbirth and raising a baby and all that is required of that, it's terrifying. And I really did have this feeling of, I am just going to focus. You know, I mean, it wasn't even a conscious decision. It was just what my brain kind of required me to do. And I think it was protecting me, or protecting itself, I guess. But yeah, so that was, and that, you know, of course, also connects to all the other stuff, to the climate crisis and ecological collapse. And what does it mean to be, you know, bringing a child into the world and raising a child in a world that is in real danger. So yeah, it's something that I think about a lot. And so there's a number of poems in the book that touch on that also.
That's so interesting. I'm a parent also, a child that's not so small anymore, a teenager, but it's it sounds like it also relates to, because it's almost the sense of having blinders on, right, in order to do your job.
Yep.
Or, you know, as a parent, as a mother or a father, it's kind of an interesting thing to point out, because there are things, there are beautiful things, there are perhaps important things that we must ignore, right? That's kind of troubling, but also this is how we survive. So similar perhaps to the first poem, these things we do, these kind of breaks we give ourselves, knowing that we're in a kind of a flawed situation. It feels to me like you're also pointing out how we survive. I mean, we do these things to survive, whether it's making things up or, you know, but we find a way to, I don't know if rationalize is the right word, but to justify our behavior and our actions in this unusual environment.
Right. Mm. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a survival thing, right? You kind of think, all right, well, I've got to do the job that I've got to do. And, you know, sometimes that means, for me at least, it means not fully allowing myself to think about all the other very sort of complicated and difficult things out there so that I can do the work that I need to do, whether that's the work of parenting or the work of teaching or whatever it might be. I think I found, you know, I think all of us have in some ways, we have found certain ways to preserve ourselves enough to do the things we have to do. Sometimes at the expense of maybe fully sinking into some other experiences or considerations.
Right. So let's hear one more. There's one more you're reading also from Danger Days, which came out just this past fall, correct?
Yeah, it came out in October, from Saturnalia Books. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I was going to read the last one in the book. So this one is, this is the last poem in the book. It's called Planet. One of the things that I was thinking about in writing Danger Days was the idea of viewing our planet as a planet. So kind of stepping back and looking at this really just completely remarkable sphere that we live on, and that it's so easy to not see, right? We spend our days kind of living our lives and doing all whatever we have to do, and it's really easy to kind of just stop considering, or to never consider, the planet as a planet, right? As this just amazing space that we happen to be able to live on. And so this is a poem about that. And it came from, on Mississippi State's campus, there is an observatory with telescope, a big telescope, and every once in a while the astronomy club opens it up to the public. And they'll say, okay, tonight we're going to be able to view, you know, Saturn or Jupiter, and you can go out there once it gets dark, you know, 9:30 at night, and we'll have the giant telescope and some other smaller telescopes and a few people there to talk to you about it. And it's great. It's out in this remote farm, and very strange because not that many people know about it. So it's always just you and like 10 other people out there in the dark in this field, and it's great. And so a few years ago, they had a viewing night, and my family went out there to see, and we saw, and it was Jupiter was the planet that we were able to see that night. And so I had kind of a funny reaction to it. So, and that comes up in the poem. It's called Planet. This morning, this planet is covered by winds and blue. This morning, this planet is lit with dustless perfect light, enough that I can see 1,000,000 sharp leaves from where I stand. I walk on this planet. It's hard-packed dirt and prickling grass, and I don't fall off. I come down light if I choose, heavy if I choose. I never float away. Sometimes I want to be weightless on this planet, and so I wade into a brown river or dive through a wave and for a while feel nothing under my feet. Sometimes I want to hear what it was like before the air, and so I duck under the water and listen to the muted hums. I'm ashamed to say that most days I forget this planet, that most days I think about dentist appointments and plagiarists and the various ways I can try to protect my body from itself. That last weekend, I saw Jupiter through a giant telescope, its storm stripes, 4 of its 67 moons, and was filled with fierce longing, bitter, that instead of Ganymede or Europa, I had only one moon floating in my sky, the moon called Moon, its face familiar and stale. But this morning, I stepped outside, and the wind nearly knocked me down. This morning, I stepped outside, and the blue nearly crushed me. This morning, this planet is so loud with itself, its winds, its insects, its grackles and mourning doves, that I can hardly hear my own lamentations. This planet, all its grooved bark, all its sand of quartz and bones and volcanic glass, all its creeping thistle lacing the yards with spiny purple. I'm trying to come down light today. I'm trying to see this place even as I'm walking through it.
Thank you, Catherine. So that's very beautiful.
Thanks.
I really like the feeling of that also. So I suppose run through this book, this sense of, it's possible to avoid really this sense of parenting in this kind of situation. Right. It's not something we talk about a lot, but that's also what's running through these poems, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think for me, all those things are, you know, I can't separate any part of it from any other part of it. It's all just there together, you know?
Yeah. And it's such a kind of complex situation, right? It's and children really bring that into focus. You're bringing children into the world. You want it to be hopeful, right. You know, it's such a kind of, for parents, you know, I think it's a really difficult situation. How do you do that? And I suppose you're really discussing all that in all of these, you know, by in so many ways we do it. But I guess we're still inventing those ways too, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we always have. You know, I was just reading a book yesterday where this woman was talking about, you know, life being kind of absurd, that we bring children up to believe in things that'll work out, and then when you're older, you realize it's absurd. you know, that there isn't a sense to things that we'd like to think there are, and that's really difficult for raising a child with, right? Maybe it's this age, this whole time of this whole, the Anthropocene, everything that's happening makes parenting very difficult. Makes parenting something different than it ever was, perhaps, or no? Do you think this was always part of it? You know, people living in war situations or whatever. It's parents are always kind of doing this type of thing, or do you think there's really peculiar things happening now?
No. I do. I mean, I think both. I think that yes, I absolutely. I'm sure that parents, you know, forever have been dealing with these issues of how do I shepherd my child through this? How do I teach them, you know, to see beauty in things and to feel hope and gladness, and also to be aware of these terrible things and to not be, you know, ignorant of the atrocities that are happening and to be an empathetic person and, you know, I mean, all these things. But I do think too that this, you know, climate crisis and sort of this the ecological devastation that we see happening, just, you know, rampant every week there's another story, and the fires out west, and I mean just the extreme weather, and I live in Mississippi where, you know, we've had more and more tornadoes and all this sort of thing. This seems to me more particular to our own age, right? This particular age of raising children. So that's an interesting thing to be navigating, and to be kind of trying to talk about while still, I mean, I'm still really trying to teach my kids about celebrating, you know, the outside world and being in the woods as much as we can and going to the ocean and doing all these things, and to really celebrate that and find real joy in it, even as we know that all these things are in danger, right? So it's a balancing act, I think, for me as a parent and as a writer. I mean, I think I'm dealing with both those things in my writing as well. I'm celebrating at the same time that I'm mourning, you know? So I think that's kind of what's running through both my parenting and my poem.
Celebrating and mourning at the same time. Yeah, I think that nails it. And that seems so almost impossible. I mean,
No wonder we're so tired all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I can't think of the name of this book. It was something like a book that was recently written about the kind of, not the unthinkable earth, but something like that, where it was about it's essentially about the earth, these ecological disasters. And among other things in this particular book, you know, at one point, because this is the question that seems to be asked, even if it's not directly asked, which is, hey, do you have a kid? You know, are you really that negative? You know, was kind of what he was saying.
Right.
And of course you said, yeah, I do have a kid, and you know, I do hope things get better, but it's difficult to kind of say the truth. And well, maybe it's not. I mean, because you're saying the truth, but at the same time, I mean, the uninhabitable earth, that was the book.
Okay.
It's such a disturbing book. He talks about exactly how, you know, ecological collapse will unfold, the kinds of things that will happen on the planet. It's really a horror story to read, but there's this existential kind of question among parents, really, I guess, right? Or if that's not reaching too far of what do we tell our kids? How do we enjoy ourselves? How do we enjoy the outdoors, enjoy the sky? And I guess it's in just the way you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think for me it is, you know, and I think a lot of people are, you know, kind of walking that same line these days.
Absolutely. So let me ask you one more question. What are you reading at the moment?
So not a lot, because I don't have a lot of time.
You're
no,
very
I
busy,
mean, I'm,
yeah.
It's things are very busy. So, you know, I'm reading obviously the stuff that I'm teaching for my classes, which, you know, I could tell you about that. I mean, I'm teaching a intermediate poetry workshop right now at Mississippi State, and we're talking, it's kind of loosely organized around poetry of the planet in some way. And so in there, we're reading a few books. We're reading Amy Nzhukumatathil's book, Oceanic. We're reading Camille Dungy's Trophic Cascade. And we're reading Ross Gay's Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude, which are all just these really gorgeous books of poetry that kind of do that thing, right, where they have some mourning and they have some celebrating, and they're really kind of connected to the planet in these really beautiful ways. And there's also an anthology that was put out by Copper Canyon a couple years ago called Here, Poems for the Planet, and we're using that. And then other than the stuff I'm reading for classes, I'm reading Middlemarch. I've been reading Middlemarch for a really long time. I'm still reading Middlemarch, and I'm just kind of slowly, you know, picking my way through it. It's I'll pick it up and then I'll put it aside for a couple of weeks while I get bogged down in teaching and doing all the various, you know, things that I'm doing as a parent, and then I'll pick it up and I'll read a little more and I'll step back into this world that is nothing at all like the world that we are currently living in. So
right.
It's a little bit escapist, you know. So that's,
and then
that's
there must be another category of what you're reading to your kids.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah. So that's a whole different thing. That's a lot of like Captain Underpants.
I read some.
I mean, they're great. They're hilarious. You know, the Dogman books, we've been reading those. But no, there's other stuff we've read too. What have we read lately? We just finished, the Sideways Stories from Wayside School Books by Lewis Sacker, which were books that I read when I was a kid that I just love because they're so incredibly weird and funny. And my kids have also, I've been really glad to know that my kids have loved them too. So that's been fun. I mean, it's really a blast to go back and read with my kids the stuff that I read as a kid. So like the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basile Frankweiler was one of my favorites. And I read that with my son a couple years ago. And I mean, these things are just totally joyous to do. So we've been doing a lot of that, and that's been great. So yes, I am up on my kids' literature. That's a thing I've been really reading a lot of lately.
Right. I like that. I'm glad you mentioned that. Catherine, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time and your work.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was such a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.